whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market. Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you here.
What you laughing
about?
Was
my last name again? I'm laughing at something you put in the rundown.
Oh.
So we'll get
good,
to it in a second.
I don't remember.
We'll get to it in a second. I just glanced down at it. You can text the show, 713-572-4610.
I do, just for the listeners, I genuinely asked Sean many times, like, did I write that? So I'm like, yeah, you did. I'm like, I don't know, man.
It's really good.
I just, okay, cool. I'll take credit
for
it. I have no memory of it.
Yeah. You were on one, man. You're good.
Not because I was drunk. I just kind of get into that mode where I'm just brainstorming. Yeah.
Hell yeah. CJ Stroud. So, what level of game? I was listening to the guys on the drive yesterday, and they were talking about, I think the question Ron asked was, where is the area where the Texans might have the biggest advantage in this game? And I don't think Clint answered, like, where they have the biggest advantage, but what Clint said was he thought the biggest thing that they needed in this game was to get a big game. Like, the old CJ needs to show up for this game.
Yeah.
I don't know that the A-plus level CJ needs to show up for this game. I just know that the version of CJ that we've seen all too often this year can't show up
you
for
know
this
what?
Game.
It's interesting because for both these quarterbacks, where Herbert's had a much better year, obviously, but there's an element of being a young quarterback that's got prodigious physical skills where you do also have to learn when to be a game manager. And I made the mistake of using the game management term in a YouTube video, to which... As I was explaining that Justin Herbert is much more than just a game manager, but that was the greatest insult ever.
You should have just done a video on politics.
You can't
You'd have been better
word.
Off.
You can't use the word. It just triggers people so quickly that they
polarizing.
Stop thinking about it. No, but part of the transition of being going from a young quarterback to a genuine veteran is understanding when and where to be a game manager. And that's been something that CJ's been dealing with this season is figuring out when to take the easy money versus when to push the ball downfield. And I think he's made progress at it. And that's where, precisely with what something you said earlier in the show is, like a good game for CJ in this game might be 205 yards passing and with no interceptions.
That's right.
It doesn't have to be a prolific performance. It needs to be part of a complete team performance. So CJ all season long has made some really, really impressive throws. But it's just, okay, but when do you make the simple throw? When do you make the easy throw?
Yep, and he's tried to get better and better at that. Here was Nick Caserio. On Wednesday with us this week when we asked him, is C.J. Stroud a better quarterback now than he was this time last season?
I'm sure you could talk to him about it, but C.J.'s had a really good year. So he's done a really nice job. I think his overall grasp and understanding of what we're doing offensively, and I think he made a comment in the two or three games ago, whatever it was after the game, that he's seen it better than he has. He's seen it better right now than he has it earlier in his career. Mm-hmm. Look, this position, it's the hardest position in all of sports. Like, I'll argue that with anybody on any level. It's the hardest thing that you do. Things happen quick. You're going to have to deal with things. When you play, people have an opportunity to evaluate, what do you do well? You know, what are your weaknesses? What are some of the things that maybe if we little force him to do this? So part of growth and development is having an understanding of not only what you're doing offensively on your side of the ball, but having an understanding of what they're doing on the other side of the ball. So CJ's done a great job. He's had a good attitude. He's had a good approach. And he's been very open and honest and about where he is and maybe some of the things that he's had to deal with. But I've talked about this. DeMeco's talked about this. There's no other player that we'd rather have playing quarterback than CJ Stroud for this football team. And he's played a lot of good football. And, you know, hopefully he can continue that moving forward into the playoffs.
And I think that kind of everything that Nick was saying there, I think the hard part to figure out with quarterbacks is always, all right, how much are his surroundings the cause of it versus how much should he be better at dealing with those adverse circumstances and everything else? And it's been really, really hard because in some respects, this year there have been times where, okay, he's a second-year quarterback, and he's made second-year quarterback mistakes or, you know, had some of those same issues. But at the same time, he's also trying to deal with all that while he's getting pressured more than anybody else in the league.
Up and, the middle, too, which is the hardest.
The level of difficulty is really tough. It's like doing a math test in 10 minutes or 5 minutes, and everybody's a worse mathematician in 5 minutes than they are in 10.
It's a good way to put it.
So it's just really hard to figure it out. But if you, I went through this yesterday. I was kind of like, okay, if you focus on your strengths of the team, and even over these last few weeks, where Bobby Slowick, you know, said they figured some things out offensively the last 3 weeks. Like, all right, well, you haven't scored points in the last 3 weeks.
Right,
I'd like that to go. But, all right, what have they done well in the last 3 weeks that maybe they couldn't lean into before, and then they lean harder into that? Hopefully with CJ, and maybe CJ's relationship with Deontay in practice, Deontay Johnson, because now he's had a couple weeks in practice, that they can lean into that. And it's one game. You can just, you can throw every wrinkle in there and everything else to get the absolute best version of CJ.
Here was Jim Harbaugh earlier this week when he was asked about CJ Stroud.
You know, from the moment, well, watching him on tape, you know, as a high school player, I was like, wow. You know, it really intrigued. And then flew out to Los Angeles, got in a rental car, and drove up to Rancho Cucamonga. And just watching him play in person, you know, from the side. And then I started watching him from the end zone. I'm like, this guy's the real deal. I mean, he's going to go all the way. And, yeah, wish we would have got him. But to come to our school, but he's a great player. You know, just there's I mean, all the talent is there. I mean, he's got the courage. So many times I've seen, like, you know, defender coming right at him, and he just stands in there. You know, lets him get close enough, almost knows they're going to hit him, and then he's able to, you know, get the ball up over him, around him, and we're talking 16, 18 yard in breaking dig routes or routes to the sideline, and he's a great guy and tremendous competitor.
So I'm not gonna just sit here and let him insult CJ like that over and over again. Joking. He was like, it was over the top gushing praise for CJ.
Yeah,
Stroud.
Yeah.
A quick note on Jim Harbaugh, because I watched that press conference.
Yeah,
it's for the people out there that are working on their presentation skills and everything. Everybody knows that you speaking with your hands is good and everything, unless you're somebody that is, unless you're a Facebook guy there.
Zuckerberg.
Oh. He's been coached to talk with his hands, but
you can tell.
No, what Harbaugh does that he takes to the next level is he pantomimes the story that he's doing.
Oh,
so like when he's talking about driving to Rancho Cucamonga, he's making the steering wheel motion.
Yeah, man.
And then when he's talking about, there was a point where he's talking about CJ and Justin Herbert, where he's actually doing the body positioning of a quarterback and everything. Yeah. Very,
good advice.
Very engaging. But everything he said about CJ, and I think the courage part of it, that's another thing that with young quarterbacks, it's great. When to be courageous and when is discretion the better part of valor? That's something that CJ's had to learn this year is, all right, when do I really try to jam it in there? When do I try to make a throw from a muddy pocket? And when do I leave the pocket? And because of the pass protection, that's where it felt like CJ took a step backwards in some regards in the pocket presence element of things because of that cumulative abuse that he took throughout the season.
Yeah.
He started to do stuff where he took sacks that he wouldn't have taken in the past. He's bailing out backwards out of the pocket instead of stepping up.
Yes. He's taking bad sacks.
Yeah, and there was one play in the game last week where he stepped up in the pocket, but it was because he started to bail out backwards, but then the guy that Titus was blocking chose to go outside, you know, and it forced CJ back up into the pocket, and he ended up making a nice throw. And you're like, yeah, that's like almost by, it was almost like there were guardrails that pushed him back up into the proper spot in the pocket.
Yeah.
Versus the Tennessee game a couple weeks prior, he took a safety stepping out the back of the pocket.
Right.
And that was a dicier situation, but that's the stuff that, man, if some of that can kind of come to him, that poise that he had before he got hit as many times as he did this year, second most sacks in the league,
yeah,
that's the part that it's got to come with improved pass protection as well.
One of the simplest things about where CJ is right now that I think we need to be reminded of is something you sent to me yesterday, a graphic. I had seen it on social media. Someone posted it on Reddit, and you'd seen it on Reddit. He's the youngest quarterback in this postseason.
Yeah.
And this is a postseason that includes two rookie quarterbacks, Jaden Daniels and Bo Nix, who are both 24 years old.
Yeah.
Like that, CJ's 23 years old, and he's not an old 23 either. Like, he turned 23 like in week 4 of the season.
Yeah.
Came into the season 22 years old. So like that's where for like the long-term prospects with CJ, like in my mind, I've got to tamp back a little bit. Like, all right, he's 23.
I think that's where, you know, we've had this discussion about the NBA and with guys like Jalen Green. There is that's where you got to tamp down some of your wannabe old school tendencies, or at least I do, where you want to be like, it doesn't matter, he's a professional. You got to kind of remember that, yeah, okay, no, age does matter. Like, guys' brains aren't fully developed until you're 23, 24, 25 years old.
Yeah.
There's a maturity aspect there. It's not, I'm not saying that people are immature when they're that age, but it's just a matter of, you got to grow into some of these things, and that he is very, very young. That was the first time I ever thought about this was I was talking to a restaurant manager a long time ago, and he was telling me about something that a couple of his employees had done, like, was just pretty jackass, just jackass stuff. And I was like, why did you fire him on the spot? And he's like, no, man, when you're in this business, you're dealing with a lot of kids who this is their first job ever. And like, there's some things that they just don't know.
And hiring people sucks.
Yeah. And it's costly.
It's costly too. It's time consuming. It's easier if it's not super bad stuff.
Yeah.
And this, you're right. This applies to everything. If it's not any employee, if it's not that bad, if it's fixable, it's much less costly and time consuming to fix it than it is to replace it.
And this guy was a grumpy old guy, like in a lot of ways. He was a Vietnam vet and everything. Like he was an old grizzly dude. But when it came to understanding that, man, sometimes simply youth and inexperience is something that's just, it's going to happen and you work your way through it. And I think that's echoed in the things that Casario and D'Amico have said when talking about CJ. And I'm not saying that like CJ has been an immature quarterback or anything, but it's a reminder that, man, it's a development process.
Yeah.
He's going to be a better quarterback 3 years from now than he is right now.
Yes.
There's some quarterbacks where you're not so certain about that.
Yeah.
You know, young guys, I'd say a young Baker Mayfield, I wasn't convinced that he was going to be a better quarterback 3 years
later.
Good
example,
Whereas CJ, I don't worry about that. I think he's going to make a steady progression.
I do too, and he puts in the work to do it, all those things. I saw a tweet, Texans Jacob on Twitter. 4 of the last 5 games for CJ Stroud have been his highest graded games of the year. Now, one of them's week 18 where he had one drive, but the Kansas City game, the Miami game, that was a game where they had under 200 yards of offense, but okay, CJ was all right in that game.
Was that? Yeah, you'd isolate the quarterback performance from everything else out on the field.
Yep. Week 13 against Jacksonville. Those 4 games were 4 of his best games. He's got an overall grade on PFF of nearly 90 in those games, which is really, really good. A 6-2 touchdown to interception ratio. The Ravens game is obviously, you're doing the whole take out your lowest grade thing.
Yeah, I'm trying right this moment emotionally to make every excuse for the Ravens game.
Yeah, like they're an alien. That's what I say. Yeah, that's my excuse. But as far as the rest, if you do take that game out, does, from your recall on this, does that match the eye test?
I think that a lot of it goes back to what we've talked about is just understanding and learning how to manage the game.
Yeah.
Like the whole, it is what it is. The circumstances are what they are. I think he's done a much better job of checking down more quickly. Even that, the misfire in the Ravens game to Dalton Schultz, where he was getting hit by the guy that was on Laremy Tunsil as he was, or Laremy's, was it Laremy's foot that hit CJ's foot, whatever it was, where he, Dalton Schultz was wide open in the flat.
Yep. I think that it was one, Laremy.
Like, okay, you could argue that maybe he should have checked down a little bit earlier, but when you go back and watch that, it's just the pocket was compressed so quickly, and there were routes developing downfield. The pocket wasn't collapsed so quickly, but it was collapsed uniformly to where it was a phone booth.
Yeah.
And then he's getting hit as he's throwing the ball, but he still was making the right decision there. Checking the ball to Joe Mixon last week. Like these kinds of things I think he's done a better job of. I would say I think the Kansas City game up till the Tank Dell, and even after the Tank Dell injury, CJ was playing really well. It's just that CJ made the game losing mistakes on that final red zone push.
Oh, that was a bad sack.
It was a bad sack, and it was also a bad, what did he do? There was another bad play. Oh, the delay of game, which is that on Bobby? Is that on CJ? I don't know. But it was like there were quarterback-related issues down at the end of that drive that kind of undid some of the good things he'd done earlier in the game.
We're not going to do it right now. We'll do it in a few minutes. Are you ready to do the Circle of Swarm this week?
Oh, no, I completely forgot about it.
Okay, well, that's...
I'm not ready.
How about we listen to some Will Anderson, and in your mind, you can start to get your swarm rankings.
I see what
together.
You're doing. You're priming the pump here. You're trying to, like, it's like you're forcing a card as a magician or
like
something. Yeah.
The Will Anderson card.
Before you decide on who your favorite player is, here's
listen to the swarmiest player on the team. Yeah. Will Anderson met with it. I just love listening to Will Anderson. He met with it.
It's contagious. His enthusiasm.
He is a delight.
It's an enthusiasm unknown to man.
It is. It is indeed. Will Anderson Jr. Talking about just the culture of the team, how excited he is about the postseason.
It's just been a blessing this year just to be around so many new people because Mario Edwards, he has been in the league for 10 years, and this is only second year being in the Super Bowl. I mean, being in the playoffs. So, like, I've been blessed enough to be in the league 2 years already and be in two playoffs myself. So, like, we want to keep this thing rolling. Like, we're going to keep the culture rolling, keep getting the right guys in here, and just growing as a, you know, as an organization. And I think this year it really showed that. And, like, I say, like, what Joe said, like, you have to cherish this moment and embrace it and really step into it fully.
That's interesting. Joe
Mixon or Joe Montana? Joe Mixon said that.
Yeah. So, I think this just popped into my head as he's saying that. You know, hey, man, I've been in the league 2 years and already I get to go to the playoffs twice.
Yeah.
You know, and I say this, I know that there's people listening that were hoping they'd be the one or two seed. They are in the playoffs. They are in the postseason.
Yeah.
You were a young player who was on a good team.
Exactly like that. Yeah. And you get those same speeches. The guy Will cited was Mario Edwards, this is only his second time in the playoffs, I believe.
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
And he's been in the league for a decade or however long. You get that speech from the older guys.
Listen when they said it to
you? I listened, and you know it intellectually, but you don't feel it. Right. You know, it's like anything else in life when a young person's, they hear the message, but you don't feel it, you know, and especially Will. Now, all Will knows of high level football is going to the playoffs in college.
They went to the non playoff Sugar Bowl or whatever it was, and that was like the most that was the most disappointing game he played in the postseason.
I think, honestly, gosh, I almost get a little teary as I start to talk about this. For a guy like Will, I think the way he's wired. I think what you really feel when you're hearing that speech, especially from guys who have been, like one of the veteran players I was with was Jeff Loggeman, who was a Jets first round pick back in the day, you know? And I don't remember him being on any of the good Jets teams. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you almost feel an obligation to do it for those guys.
Yeah.
Like, all right, man, I'm lucky and this is awesome, but man, I really want to do it for this guy. Like, Mario, how many years does Mario Edwards have left? How many years does, they got five guys in that defensive line room that are 30 years old.
Nico Autry, Jerry Hughes.
Jerry Hughes, yeah.
Jerry Hughes is like 90.
Yeah,
you know?
And Will's wired that way. He probably feels like a sense of obligation to get those guys.
I guarantee
deep
you
into
he
the playoffs.
Does. That's a great point. I guarantee you he does. Because he's the only young guy really in that. You know, they brought in, well, even Togiai that they brought in has been in the league 5 or 6 years on a bunch of teams. You know, he's by far, like, he's the young guy in that room. I bet he does.
Like wanting to do something nice for your parents in retirement.
That's right. Or Danielle Hunter. Will was asked about this. How has Danielle Hunter helped you this year?
Me and Danielle, it's a great balance. I'm more of a like, calm down. And he's more of like a relaxed reserve. And like when I look at him, he helps my demeanor just calm down because he's like, bro, I'm good. Like it's going to come. Like I'm not worried. It's like that's one thing I can really take from him. Like he's really been able to be my like my cool down. Like, bro, you just got to keep stacking. You just got to keep going. So that's one thing I would say I've taken from him this season.
The cool down factor. Yeah, I was reading a story about why everything unraveled in New England, and one of the theories is that Jerod Mayo had too many guys that were first-time coaches on his staff, or at least first-time NFL coaches.
A ton.
Yeah. And there's a certain thing to be said for, yes, the X's and O's experience and wisdom is great, but there's also that, man, like, the same reason these Silicon Valley types like to have hire a few older people who can kind of, like, tamp things down a little bit and, you know, kind of be a heat check for when guys get too emotional or too over the top. That dynamic is probably really good for Will. I actually thought of, there's a old Texans coach, Chick Harris, who's a running backs coach with Dom Capers.
Great name.
Who's an awesome guy.
Chick Harris.
And he's in hospice right now. And I was doing a video to send to him. And I realized as I was listening to Will Anderson talk about that dynamic with Danielle Hunter, I'm like, oh yeah, that was Chick Harris with me, and he was a running backs coach, but I talked to him a lot, and he was in the cafeteria
really cool.
And everything, and he was one of these guys that had been in the league a long time and just had like this calm, cool, and collected demeanor to him.
Yeah.
That when times are tough, and there were some tough times with those early Texans teams, he calmed me down and kind of puts perspective on things. And like, you need guys like that in an organization. He was like Chick Harris was an example for me of like, oh yeah, things don't have to be dire. Like, no, it doesn't. Everything is not, every crisis is not actually a crisis.
That's interesting.
You can just settle the hell down. You know?
How did that, what's interesting to me is that not only was he, I mean, he was a position coach on the opposite side of the ball.
Yeah.
Like, how did that come about? Like, how did
just conversations and just hanging out before a meeting. You know,
you could like, just tell talking
I was always
to the guy.
10 minutes early to a meeting, and Chick Harris was always 10 minutes to a meeting, that kind of thing. We're just sitting in the cafeteria. No, I'm glad you brought up that element of it, though, too, because it's not just on your side of the ball. If you have a genuine team, it's everybody. You're talking to guys from all sides of the ball, and it's not just the X's and O's. It's the approach to life.
That's what got brought up quite a bit during Aziz Alshire suspension.
Yeah.
Not during it, but like when he came back.
Like what they missed in his leadership.
It was like CJ was talking about it. You know, like he and CJ, you could tell if you were out of practice every day like we were, you could see that the two of them were forming a bond, mm-hmm. talking after practice, going through things. What did Aziz see out there? What did CJ see out there? And then just the general leadership. Like Aziz he's an exceptional leader as well. And I don't think a lot of people realize that he's not allowed on campus during a suspension.
Right, yeah. He's not allowed in the building or anywhere around. The coaches aren't allowed to contact him.
Yeah, and I think it matters.
That was one of Casario's objections to the way the process is. Yes. It's like, okay, these are guys that, like, especially in Aziz's situation where it felt like the whole world was coming down on him, that you'd like to be able to support them.
The mental health aspect of it. Yeah, totally. Like, even just little thing. Like, it was a big deal yesterday to guys, I guess Tank Dell and Jalen Petrie were both at practice yesterday. Like, Jalen's been, like, super plugged in.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know incrementally, like, how that helped.
It's the sum total of everything. It's the whole synergistic part of it.
Yeah.
You know? And that's hard to do. Like, it honestly, that's more of a compliment to Jalen Petrie than you might realize, because it's when you're not actually involved in the game planning and you're not going to play in that game, and when you're also rehabbing, like, you got to make extra effort to be involved with everything else, because you're doing rehab. Like, they have the guys that are on IR do rehab separately from everybody else because of time management and everything.
Yep.
So it's a committed effort. It's not just like, hey, I'm here, might as well hang out. It's like you gotta actually put some energy into it.
One more from Will Anderson. How has your leadership style evolved this season?
I think that's one thing that Miko had challenged me on, just being more vocal and using my voice. And today when I broke it down, I was just saying, like, you know, Derek Barnett, we coach access to go around the room in our position meetings and say, like, our playoff experience. And, you know, Derek Barnett's been blessed enough to win the Super Bowl. And he was just saying, like, all those things, like, physical, like, yeah, but it was just mentally. So I just reiterated that to the team and wanted to repeat that, because that's really all it is with our team. Just, like, we got to be mentally sharp. Like, we got to be mentally sound. And there's no room for errors.
All right, yeah, I guess he broke the team down yesterday at practice, Will did.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was the genesis of that question.
When Will was talking about how enthusiastic he is and how sometimes he needs to tamp it down, I just thought about what would it be like with Will Anderson on a Jim Harbaugh team? Or just those two fishing. Like, what it must be like.
That would be amazing.
I would worry for Jim Harbaugh's health. I feel like he might have an aneurysm. He'd get worked up. It'd be just those two getting enthusiastic about stuff.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the boat might tip
I've never
over.
Seen a bass like that. That's the most incredible bass I've ever seen.
The boat might I feel like the two of them would just rock the boat back and forth just to see how close they could get to tipping it over without
the danger
capsizing.
Of capsizing would be huge.
Yes. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Are you ready?
I'm ready
to get all swarmy here? All right, this could be. I hope it's not. I've predicted it won't be, but you don't know. This could be the final Circle of Swarm of this season. So we do it every Friday, the Circle of Swarm.
You know, D'Amico always says, swarm.
What we're looking for is players, right, who are looking to swarm.
The swarm mindset, that whole mentality.
Right, we want players to have a special work ethic and a relentless mindset in everything that they do. Everything that they do.
Who's in?
This is a special group of men, believe it.
It's the Payne and Pendergast Texans Circle of Swarm.
I don't know why it tickled me so much this time. The cut of Bobby at the beginning of that, of Bobby Slowick, just the way he says it. You know, D'Amico always says, swarm. Ben, play the Ben. Play. Can you play? You probably have to redo the whole bit. Don't you? Never mind. We'll play
like,
it later.
Is it a little bit like Mark Zuckerberg's body language?
A little bit. Like there's this pregnant pause right before Swarm, and he makes it sound like I envision Bobby telling like relaying D'Amico's message, like pointing two fingers at people, like you know, like D'Amico always says. Swarm. It's just funny to me. I don't know why we've heard the intro to that probably 15 times this year. I don't know why it tickled me this time. All right, are you ready to go first here?
I'm ready.
All right, so we pick.
Yes, I'm going first. I'm going first because I will right the wrong previously done by one.
I've got him on the list. Don't you worry.
Oh, do you? I don't hear you saying Derek Barnett's name.
If I had a chance, I would.
Ah!
All right, just so people know what the Circle of Swarm is, if you're new to the show, each Friday before a game, Seth and I pick the six swarmiest players on the team based on recent performance with a little bit of sprinkling of what we're hoping for in the next game.
Yeah, it's very
subjective.
A gut feel thing.
It's a gut feel thing. You and I each pick three. And back and forth draft style.
So Derek Barnett, because he had a fumble.
I screwed him like a month ago.
Recovered fumble. I had a discussion with somebody about one of our listeners about this because I said I was talking about this play where they were running a little end around with a tight end and the tight end mishandles the handoff. Ball's on the ground. Derek Barnett hits the tight end, picks up the ball, runs for a touchdown.
Yeah.
Most people listening remember that play.
Sure.
Somebody said they wanted credit for the caused fumble too because the runner saw.
He might have seen Barnett
in his face.
He visually disrupted things.
I cannot remember for the life of me who the player was.
I think it was Oliver.
Oh, okay.
Number 80. Yeah.
Okay, sorry. So, and then scores a touchdown.
You're talking about the guy he plowed
over.
Yeah.
Second touchdown scored by Derek Barnett this year. Somehow we didn't put him in the circle of
Swarm.
That's
on me.
That was... But Derek Barnett in that game also had another tackle for loss previous to that. He had a sack. Previous to that, he also had a key pressure on a third and long that forced an incompletion. I mean, he almost single-handedly had four game-killing plays.
He legit swarmed in that game.
It was a really good. I think Ross Tucker said it was the game of his life, or one of the guys on the broadcast crew said that he had the game of his life. So, yes. And look, the Texans have struggled to score points this year.
Mm-hmm.
A third Derek Barnett touchdown this week.
That would be great.
I'm not going to turn it down, Sean.
That would be great.
I'm not going to kick that out of bed for eating crackers.
Kick this touchdown out of bed.
Yeah.
So, Derek, good. You've righted the wrong. That was on me. It was not personal for Derek Barnett. It just, for whatever reason.
It was a numbers crunch.
It was a glitch. I totally forgot. So good. So, Derek Barnett is in. I'm going to go off of last game, too. It's hard not to put Damian Pierce in the Circle of Swarm. He had his best game of his career.
Yeah.
92-yard touchdown. He had some runs in there where he looked like the old Damian again.
Yeah.
You know, it was the 92-yard touchdown run. This sounds like very, very weird praise. The 92-yard touchdown run was one thing, and especially how when he gets to top speed, his speed belies kind of his physique and look.
He's been more slender for the last couple years. It's just we didn't see him do much with it last year.
No. That kickoff return.
Yeah.
That was the
only
time.
So I think that was probably the biggest evidence that we had is like, oh, yeah, he is a different guy than his rookie year, but in this manner, a better way than his rookie year.
Yeah, in this manner. And so the 92-yard run was great. I love that on his other 18 carries, he had 84 yards.
Yeah.
You know, he had some chain-moving runs. He had an 11-yard run, a 15-yard run where he was running over guys when he got to the second level.
And I think the other good part of that was that there were times, including when Tavondre Sweat or Jeffrey Simmons were in the game, that it was because of good blocking. You know, was like they were, as D'Amico said, they were staying attached better. Like, it's one thing when you block well for the first two or three steps of a run play, but then you'd see Juice Scruggs on a linebacker sustaining a block downfield, Titus Howard sustaining blocks. That was good to see.
It was really good to see.
Nick got a little chippy with me when I asked him when we had him on. I said, hey, and I didn't do that thing where, like, some people are wondering, where's Damian Pierce been all year?
Yeah, you asked the question.
I said, like, why haven't we seen Damian Pierce get more opportunities? And Nick was like, basically, like, because we got Joe Mixon.
Yeah.
Understandable answer. That's they never felt like Joe Mixon needed that much of a spell. But I think a certain bit of having somebody to come in and make it a two-headed monster would be a really nice development in the postseason.
Yeah, if we didn't have 20 other things to talk about with him, if it had been an hour and a half long podcast, I think it would have been a fair follow-up question to say, yeah, look, but other teams have star running backs and their backup running back does get five carries a game. You know, like it's been Joe and nobody else for the Texans. Mixon seems to be holding up just fine.
Yeah.
And if he's fine physically, then I get that. But I think they're a little lucky, maybe, that he's fine physically right now, given how much run he's had this year. All right, so I take Damian Pierce for the Circle of Swarm. Your next pick.
My next pick, this is the third one picked?
Third pick.
Aziz Alshire. This was not a hard one for me. Aziz Alshire, for everything he's able to do, not just in terms of his actual play, but as the leader of the defense, and especially this week where, man, the Chargers can hurt you over the middle. But they can also run the ball effectively. And the linebackers need to be really, really disciplined and dialed in and not make it easy for Justin Herbert. But also, you know, remind everybody that there's a price to pay when the running back runs the ball, or perhaps when a guy like Justin Herbert, who's kind of like an athletic Ben Roethlisberger, can pull the ball down and run himself. I don't know if Justin Herbert watches film or not. But, you know, going back several games, there's a... A little Trevor Lawrence moment.
Can you imagine if there's something happens in this game with Justin Herbert running the ball like in the open field, with Aziz I'm talking about?
I don't want to comment on this. It's just going to get me in trouble. look, Aaron Rodgers said that. Remember when talking about Aziz Alshire?
Yeah, you got to find zero.
That he knew that Aziz wasn't going to be playing in the Jets game, but
that was because of injury.
Yeah. But that if he were on the field, he would know where he is all the time.
Yeah.
So. The Texans, when they're on offense, the Texans have to be consciously hyper aware of where Derwin James is because he's playing so well this year.
Yeah.
You know, Aziz Alshire isn't the same caliber of player of Derwin James, but he has that same ability, I think, for Justin Herbert to want to know where Aziz Alshire is.
No doubt. All right.
And maybe slide a little bit early.
Yep.
Slide a little bit before the imaginary yellow line.
My next pick, this is part the game on Sunday. This is part, I think, representing a position group that needs to show up big, given the Chargers' ability to run the football, or at least desire to run the football. I don't think they're a great running team, but they're a very willing running team. You've compared them to the Bill O'Brien Texan teams where they established.
It's running via volume.
Yeah.
It's not that they're spectacular at it, but they use it effectively. They
it
get
works
into good
for
situations. They set up the play action, all that.
It works for them. And also something that Will Anderson just mentioned. It's only the second time this guy's been in the postseason in his career.
Yeah.
He had a big sack in the game against the Titans in Week 18. So it checks all the boxes for the Circle of Swarm. I will happily put Mario Edwards into the Circle of Swarm this week.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah,
this is a very blue-collar Circle of Swarm so far.
I think they're playing a blue-collar team.
And they have to be a blue-collar
team.
They got
to be.
This is going to be a blue-collar type of game.
Yes.
Which team is wearing actual work clothes in this game?
Hard hat.
Does your Carhartt look ironed, or does it look like it's faded and it's seen something? It's got grease stains
awesome
and everything.
If the Texans came out not with football helmets but hard hats, those like the things that look like the weightlifting braces around your midsection,
dude. I'll tell you what,
knee pads outside of the football.
That flight that I took, the multiple flights I took a couple days ago.
Yeah,
I was on a flight flying into Houston, which this happens at times where, man. There were two groups of guys on that plane that were, I could tell, there were some linesmen that they had all their work gear and luggage. They were flying first class, so you know that these guys are working and they're traveling.
Travel all the time.
They got their hard hats on, their backpack and everything. Yeah. And it looks like they're lit. They are all set up to go like immediately to the job site. So there are a bunch of those guys on this flight. And then there are a bunch of actual Cowboys. Like, I could tell they were actual Cowboys. I'm like, okay, these guys are...
It's a really interesting flight. A
couple of them, like, old, they're bow-legged and everything.
Yeah.
And I think it was a family-type thing. They were all going to... There was a really young baby with one of them.
Okay.
And it was old, crusty
Maybe
grandpa.
Maybe there's a rodeo
Looked
going
like
on.
He could have been in Yellowstone or something, you know? And you could just tell, like, the way they had their nice cowboy gear on, but it was... You could tell this was them. And I was like, and I'm sitting here in my athleisure gear and sneakers and everything. Like, I'm not
with
fit
your
to be on
fancy
the
little
same
iPad
plane with these men.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got to be like those. You got to be like United Flight 1074.
That sounds like a fun flight. Totally not worth the ordeal you went through to be on it.
Yeah.
But a fun flight.
And not as fun as it wasn't like the movie version of that where all those guys would have been drunk. They were all stone cold sober, you know.
Fight between the construction guys and the Cowboys.
I got the tougher job. Yeah. No Irons does.
I got the tougher job. The Cowboys are like hog tying the construction.
Oh, but man,
workers.
And then it was cool because I shouldn't say Cowboys because they had their wives with them.
Yeah.
But like the one that I think was the new grandfather, like as we were stuck at 1 a.m. at baggage claim for an hour and 15 minutes, like he was kind of like limping around after his granddaughter, and he's just happy as hell. But he looked like the movie version of an old cowboy. The old guy in Yellowstone.
The guy with the big mustache.
The guy who's not Sam Elliott. But you think he is for the first two seasons.
Yeah.
Like he was exactly like that.
Oh, that's awesome.
He just had this big old smile.
Oh.
You could tell that he didn't have a dip in, but he's. But he usually does, and
I would love to have that guy pick me up at the airport.
Yeah,
that would be great. We still have to pick two more.
Oh, Kalen Bullock.
Okay, for you.
So Kalen Bullock. I was trying to pick which member of the secondary, and I guess a lot of this is aspirational.
Yeah.
I think obviously, like Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter have been more consistent than Kalen Bullock, but Kalen Bullock has really grown throughout the season in playing more like a veteran amongst NFL rookies. He's first in interceptions, first in takeaways, first in passer rating allowed. Catch rate over expected. He's second in that. And his coverage EPA, that's getting a little advanced, third in that. He's done very, very well. He's come up huge as of late. This is a game in which we need takeaways by the defense.
Good one.
And Kalen Bullock is going against a quarterback who is a master at screwing with defensive backs' brains, safeties especially, because Herbert will, he'll be looking to one side of the field. His reads are over there. His shoulders aren't giving anything away, and then boom, pops over to the other side of the field, and he just doesn't give any hints or clues.
Yep.
So the safety's got to be really dialed in, and Kalen, I think, is just, it's onward and upward.
If he were a first round pick, he would be in the conversation for defensive rookie of the year.
Yeah, Lassiter and him both kind of got hosed by not being first round picks.
Yeah.
Because there's as much of a narrative based award as anything else.
Yeah, it's just
the guys who already have name recognition and PR ahead of them.
I'm not mad about it.
I'm not mad that he didn't get it or anything, but I feel jilted that those guys weren't more a part of the conversation.
I agree. Especially Bullock, because he played every game this year.
Yeah.
You know, Lassiter was in and out of the lineup with it. Not his fault.
And Bullock had the furthest to go.
Yeah.
Like, he was way more raw than Lassiter.
Well, and he's playing a position where the top two guys, like losing Jimmy Ward and Jalen Petrie.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if Kalen Bullock wasn't on this team right now?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's
the old Justin Simmons conversation would be hot. We'd be arguing about Justin Simmons.
It
would still be nice to have Justin Simmons, but at least Kalen Bullock, it makes sense that they didn't go after Justin Simmons when you see what Kalen Bullock has developed into.
Absolutely, yeah. Last one, C.J. Stroud. He had the one good drive, right? He had a 6-for-6, 50 yards, got in the end zone.
That's all I've ever asked for in a quarterback is one good drive.
It's hard to find. Well, no, but to the point we made a little earlier, like, I think he's been better than what maybe the eye test has been down the stretch. And obviously they need CJ to have a good game if they're going to beat the Chargers. So it's a little of everything there. It's tough to find guys with this game because so many guys got pulled out of the game, you know?
Yeah, this is more based on the sum total and, all right, who do we really want to see step up? The unsung heroes, a lot of those defense. It's hard to pick which unsung hero among the defensive tackles might be the guy because a lot of it, various guys throughout the year have stepped up. Tim Settle.
Settle's
been
great.
You know, Mario Edwards at times.
Foley's
back. Bonacossi.
Yeah.
Yep. So any one of those guys could be it.
Yep. All right, so Derek Barnett, Damian Pierce, Azeez Al-Shaair, Mario Edwards, Kalen Bullock, C.J. Stroud. That might be the first circle of swarm that has not included either Danielle Hunter or Will Anderson Jr. all year.
Mm-hmm.
I got to go check that. I've got the archives. I'll look at it during the break. All right, up next, college football playoff last night. Notre Dame beat, who did they beat? Penn State last night.
Disrespect.
Who should I, that's right, get out of here, James Franklin. Who should I be rooting for tonight?
Okay.
Texas or Ohio State to go up against my Irish? We'll talk about that coming up.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
Someone said a back brace, Sean. I was talking about, we were talking about if the Texans actually showed up looking like construction. We're like real blue-collar guys, like real blue-collar workers.
Oh, you meant one of those belts.
It looked like the weightlifting brace. A back brace.
Well, back braces, I understand. Yeah, like one of those.
People knew what I was talking about, right?
Yeah.
I think. This guy didn't. That would be badass, man. Show up. Show up ready to...
I should have been wearing one of those when I got my last hernia.
Ready to crack
skulls. Yeah, I decided to try to pick up a whole house dehumidifier all by myself. Dumb.
Yeah, very.
Oh, no, you know where I got... Oh, no, I know. I remember now. That was where I really realized I definitely had a hernia. After hernia surgery, like a year after, I was at my brother-in-law's place, and somebody was coming to pick up a four-wheeler from him that he had bought for my brother-in-law, and I was there. And I didn't want to be, you know, I didn't want to be a wuss. The guy was like, hey, can you help me with this? But we had to, like, We had to like lift it out of a trailer.
A four-wheeler?
Yeah, yeah. And that was right there. My pride and ego got to me. And then the other time out of necessity. And then after that, I tried to do the dehumidifier. And I'm like, oh, that's definitely
when a hernia. When you were trying to move that four-wheeler, were you the person, like, empirically that should be the strongest of the people?
Yeah.
So you wanted to kind of show off?
Yeah, I've learned my lesson. After I get this one
have
fixed.
You? Have you?
Yeah. Sure? No, now I just completely, I act like I'm an old man when it comes to that
that's
stuff.
That's good.
I'm like, yeah.
Okay, that's smart.
You're an old person struggling with a heavy suitcase and getting into the overhead compartment? Good luck.
Yep.
I ain't helping you.
Nice bag, lady.
Should have been nicer to your relatives. Maybe they'd be with you right now.
That's right.
That's exactly right. I literally said that.
That's exactly right. So tonight, it's Texas and Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl. Rough weather up in Dallas, but obviously the stadium's closed. But if you're headed up that way, drive safely. My school made it to the title game last night. They won the Orange Bowl. They beat Penn State. I'm getting texts from some of my buddies that have been listening to podcasts this morning, like after the game, in the aftermath of the game. And apparently Marcus Freeman, not real happy with James Franklin's act at their coach's press conference earlier this week.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, you could tell by looking at Marcus Freeman, but apparently Marcus Freeman used it as fuel with the team. Like,
okay, so everybody,
disrespect.
Like, people that didn't see it, James Franklin, like sitting side by side with Marcus Freeman at the press conference, starts going into a diatribe against why teams need to play in conferences and you got to play a conference championship game and everything. And it's one of those classic things where, like, well, why? What are you getting offended by? I'm just saying the truth and how I feel. Like, yeah, dude, you're saying it right next to the guy.
Yeah.
It's not something that needs to be said. And even if I kind of agree with James Franklin.
Sure.
But I felt like it was a Bush League move. And then you got to go out and win that game. You got to go out and win that game after you do that. Yeah. That's like if you go horns down at a press conference.
Yes.
Belima. You know, like you got to back that up.
That is, I can tell you from someone who went to that school, that is the equivalent of going horns down. Like Notre Dame values its independence in football. And people are going to go, it's all for the money and things like that. And the money is part of it. But it is like, I'm not going to bore people with a Notre Dame topic like this, but it is ingrained in a lot of things outside of football.
Yeah.
Going way, way back to like the 30s and 40s.
Oh, that, I just did the horns down. Is that illegal now? Did they pass that?
You did
that
it on
law?
Camera, too. You can't
I'm
even.
I'm screwed. I'm never going to live this down.
You can't even be like, I just said I did it. I didn't really. Theater of the mind. Man.
I was just, you know, speaking, you know, academically.
So who should I be rooting for tonight? Ohio State?
I think you got a better shot versus Texas.
I think so, too. The look ahead lines are actually out. If Notre Dame plays UT, the Longhorns would be a 3-point favorite.
Yeah.
And if they play Ohio State, it's over a touchdown. It's like 8.5 points.
I'm not so convinced Riley Leonard doesn't have a concussion either. I know he went through the
play
tests
better
and everything.
After.
I know. Yeah. Sometimes that's the way it works.
Yeah.
But then the cumulative effect of it.
So were you more convinced that he might have a concussion because of how he hobbled off the field after he may have been concussed or because he just. Like basically
he went off.
Turned into Joe Montana in the second half.
No, and I'm kind of speaking tongue in cheek about how, but there are delayed symptoms sometimes. You know, we saw that with Texans quarterback
Tom Savage.
Tom Savage. Remember the initial examination? He didn't test positive for the concussion, and then he did later. It's something to think about, but. It's just a better matchup versus Texas than versus Ohio State.
Yeah, Ohio State's scary right now. Yeah. They're scary offensively right now.
Tonight, man, if Texas, early on especially, if they can spring a few of their outside runs, that's the straw that stirs the drink in a lot of ways for them, then it might end up being a really good night for Texas. But Ohio State's really good at containing those and paroling the perimeter. So... That's the big one. Like in the first quarter, especially. Let's see how this run game's going.
Ohio State has the offense that you want to keep off the field if you're the other team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like Texas, in games like this.
Yeah, they want to be able to run the
possess
ball.
Possess the ball. You know, time of possession, big thing. Keep Will Howard and Jeremiah Smith and all those guys. Emeka Obuka, keep them all over there on the sideline. I know Ohio State's considered a better football team than Texas. I don't really care who wins that game tonight. I'm super excited to have my team in the title game.
By the way, I sent my congratulatory text to my friend Jeff Farragher, who went to Notre Dame.
My guy.
Yeah, well, not anymore.
Well, he surpassed yesterday by Reddick?
Is that who was it?
It was your friend from your friend that screamed, "Play Puff the Magic Dragon."
Oh, Dave Raquel.
Raquel.
Dave Rickle. I don't know why I keep saying Raquel because of the Bullocks.
Sounds
thing.
Very
Dave
European. Rickle. Yeah.
Dave Rickle. Yeah.
So you texted Farrah?
So yeah, I said I told him congrats on the big victory, but also you should know that you're now my co-host. You got demoted in my co-host power ranking of my childhood friends.
What did he say?
Yeah, he didn't reply yet. He's an emergency room doctor. He keeps odd hours.
So? This is important.
No, it's nice because I call him any time of day.
Oh, so
yeah,
he's
like, yeah, there'll be times like, yeah, like I, cause sometimes I call him at 2 a.m. and he picks up.
An emergency room doctor. This gets back to something you and I were talking about during the break.
Yeah.
That if I were an emergency room doctor, I would never drink ever in my whole life.
Right, yeah.
Ever. Like, even like if I knew I was going to be off for a couple of days.
Oh, you just don't want to even have that?
I don't
like,
even want to have,
you
like...
You don't have that hangover from the hangover?
Yeah. Like,
there is such a thing as responsible drinking, you know? That's a...
Really? Huh.
Well, I don't know. According to headlines, no, there isn't anything, any such thing. This constant,
will you tell me?
Kids, it's been a decades-long battle of people trying to find studies that show, no,
yeah,
myself included, moderate drinking is actually healthy.
Yeah.
No, it gives you cancer no matter what. No, every you can find. Trust me, this will change. Whenever, it'll all change. There'll be another scat of studies that come out. And yeah.
Will you let me know when Farragher texts back?
Oh,
it's not that I don't like him. It's just this Raquel guy seems like my kind of dude. Yeah.
Farragher, okay. Farragher's a lot like me in a lot of ways. It just managed.
I like you.
Yeah. So I don't know. Rickle's.
I mean, I like Rickle better than you.
Yeah. I think you probably like Rickle better because of the businessman side of him.
Oh, okay.
Because he's an actual businessman. You guys have that in common.
Okay.
Like you're corporate. You've got a history in corporate America.
Both businessmen who would scream weird things at a Peter, Paul, and Mary panel session.
Yeah. Or Farragher's more low-key. Like, yeah. if you're worried about your doctor, you know, like being drunk or anything, like, no, you might worry that Farragher's one of those guys that's so laid-back that people think he's a stoner, even though he's not. Like, in high school, they thought, like, hey, he must smoke a lot of pot. Like, no, he doesn't drink or smoke or anything. He's just incredibly laid-back.
Well, who's one of his good friends? Dave Matthews.
Yeah.
Okay, he definitely smokes.
No, he is. He was one of those guys. I was always jealous of kids like this. It was very, very gregarious and sociable and could be comfortable in any environment, but without ever... You know, he went to college and he started drinking when he was in college and everything. Like, he became like more of a, but he never needed that. I'd be fine with Farragher.
If you want
your appendix out, go to Farragher.
He's my guy.
Not my Waffle House worker, Dave Rickle.
I'm going to give Rickle a shot at it.
I feel like he'd pull it off.
Yeah, I feel like that's, guy went from being like on waffle duty to running the company, man, at Waffle House. I don't know. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Football Friday. What are they saying on the Charger side of things? Who are they most worried about on that defense? And what kind of questions are these guys getting asked out in Los Angeles about the Houston Texans?
Oh, yeah. There's some weird press conference questions out there.
Yeah, we'll get into that coming up next.